Welcome, everybody. It's the Roads Less Traveled podcast with Ryan Clark.
And Joe Cox.
We're here in beautiful Lincoln County, Kentucky, Stanford. You might know that that is the very prestigious university located in California. We're not there.
No, we're in Kentucky, in God's country.
Which is where I'd rather be, actually, right?
There you go.
And we're here, we're at the Lincoln County Book Fair. It's the first time they've ever done this, Joe.
First inaugural Lincoln Book Festival.
The first inaugural, first annual, first.
Is it second? I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
I think it's the first time they've ever done this. We are in the middle of a fair to Midland-sized room right now. There are little children running around, and there are we have our own kind of fan club here, Joe.
We do.
They're all named Volunteer. It's very strange.
Volunteer A, B, and C.
That's what it says in their name tags. It just says Volunteer.
Must be right.
On each one. So I'm like, hi, Volunteer, and Volunteer, and Volunteer. How are you doing? So, Joe, what are we doing here today?
We are selling and signing, enjoying the sights and sounds of scenic Stanford. And we're going to talk. We're going to talk some sports. We're going to talk some music. The meaning of life may or may not come up. It depends on who stops in.
Life, love, and loss. This podcast will make you laugh, and it will make you cry, and it will make you laugh again.
Maybe cry again.
How have we done today so far, book selling-wise, Joe?
I think we're logging at about 8. So
8 copies of our book have sold today. That's probably enough to pay for 1 gallon of gas on the way home, so that's good.
I dig it.
Totally worth it. Totally.
And we're in Stanford. What happens in Stanford stays in Stanford?
That's what we've been saying. What happens in Stanford stays in Stanford. That's right. It's a very beautiful library here, by the way.
I dig it. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Very nice. Very nice little downtown.
For the first inaugural book fest.
That's right. For the second inaugural first Lincoln Book Fair. I guess should we catch up with what we've been talking about with our team real quick? Should we say basically there's nothing that's happened since the last time we've talked? Is that right?
Absolutely nothing. And when nothing happens, we have to talk about things that have already happened.
So we're here to report about it. When nothing happens, we're on top of it.
We're on the news. What I wanted to talk about today was to try to place Aaron Harrison's big money shot in UK history context.
Aaron the Assassin Harrison. That almost like slant rhyme.
Dig it. Where does it rank? Kentucky basketball has such a great history. I sat down and pondered this for seconds, maybe even minutes, and made a list of my top 5.
Okay, now are we gonna set some ground rules for this? Is this like, okay, now first off, we have, does it have to be a shot in the NCAA tournament?
It didn't have to be shot in the NCAA tournament. I will say on my list, and I actually made a list of 10. I'll even give you the ones that I almost but didn't.
Okay, so we have like a 1 through 5, and we have honorable mention after that.
Yeah.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be in the NCAA tournament.
No.
But obviously, I would assume it has to be a pretty big-time shot to be on this list.
Yes, it does. I went as far back as 1946.
Should we go as the honorable mentions first?
Why not?
Let's go the honorable mentions first, and I will tell you why they're all wrong.
I'm going to start at 10 on my list. I didn't even rank them. Number 10,
okay.
Darius Miller gets the tray that starts to salt away the Louisville Final Four game in 2012.
Okay, so obviously your shots do not have to be game winners. They just have to be game changers.
In this case,
Momentum Swingers, which I think would be a great name for a band if we were to have a band and name one.
Darius Miller and the Momentum Swingers. I dig it.
That sounds really good. I think they would be like male Supremes. Does that sound good? They'd be out of Detroit Rock City, I think. Okay, so I like that shot. Now, obviously, we have to hear the rest of them in context before we start breaking this down. So what's number 9?
Number 9, Patrick Sparks 3 to beat the buzzer and send the Michigan State 2005 Elite Game, eighth game into overtime.
The roll around the world three that he actually got fouled on, but they didn't call it. Otherwise, they'd have hit a free throw and we got to the Final Four.
That's it. And you can't forget that he gave Billy Packer five.
That is a great part about that shot, him going over and giving him five. And probably saying some things that we can't repeat on this podcast. Okay, so that shot, I believe, was ranked number two on the KSR list that they did similar to this, which I think was grossly overrated because ultimately we lost the game.
It didn't lead to a win. It didn't lead to a championship. That's why it's on my list. It was a great moment.
Agreed.
But the second biggest, yeah, that's a little ludicrous.
So basically what we've learned now from this is that the bigger the shot in a victory really, really makes it important. So let's go to number eight.
Number eight, ironically enough, also in a loss, Anthony Epps dials up a trade to send the 1997 national title game to overtime.
Yeah, I was at that game. I've never heard a crowd so loud as when he hit that shot and sent that game into overtime. And that's a personal favorite of mine just because the player was so unheralded to take that shot, but I'm not sure I want anybody else taking that shot at that moment, to be honest with you. That was a big time thing. I wish we'd have won the game.
Yeah, that would help. And ironically enough, number seven, also a shot at a loss. There was this guy named Sean Woods who made a basket one time that was kind of important. 1992 Elite Eight versus Duke should have sent the Cats to the final.
It's really the only shot on the list, in my opinion, that comes from a loss that could be higher. Even though it was in a loss, it probably could be even up there, probably like number two, according to some people. Keep going.
I could buy that. And the final honorable mention, really wanted to get this in the top five, but I think you'll see why it's not, but yet why it's on my list for consideration here. James Lee throwing down a dunk in the final seconds of the 1978 title game, clinching the championship against Duke.
Well, it's always fun to beat Duke. It's always fun to win a title. I'm not sure I feel like that shot is that important, but that's just me. But
here was my logic, okay? If James Lee doesn't dunk that ball and Duke somehow comes back and steals that game, Kentucky would have had a 38-year national title drought. That 1978 win is giant because otherwise you're going from 1958 to 1996 without a title.
Well, I think all of that's important. I don't know, and I'm not a historian enough about that team or even that game in particular other than what Goose did, but I'm not really sure that dunk actually clinched that game. So I feel like even if he didn't dunk it, I feel like we still win. So that's where that would rank less on my list.
Yeah, fair point. But plus it's a dunk. I think it's the only dunk on the list. And James Lee needs the love. All right, top five. Here you go.
The top five.
You're going to have problems with some of these. You may or may not have a problem with number five.
Okay.
Number five is a free throw. It is the only free throw on the list. It's a free throw that Ralph Beard makes in the 1946 NIT.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And clinches Kentucky's first national championship.
No, yeah, I have no problem with that one at all. I think it's kind of the forgotten national championship, really. And a forgotten player that people need to remember. I think it's a great moment. Yeah, good call.
Thank you. I appreciate your vote of confidence. Number four, Scott Padgett dials up a tray to take the lead that the Cats never relinquished against Duke in the 1998 regional final.
Got to be one of the most satisfying wins as a fan that we've ever had. I remember sitting in Granddad's basement watching that and just absolutely losing it when that shot went in. I don't really think there was any doubt from that moment on, even though I know that there was still a few seconds to go in that game, but I don't think there was any doubt after that we were going to win that game.
That was kind of the stake through the heart of the basketball vampire that was the Duke Blue Devils. Absolutely agree.
You know, it's funny because Padgett, you know, I know we've interviewed him a couple of times. I know Padgett says during his time in Houston, when both he and Shane Battier played on the Rockets, he said that there was not a college basketball season that went by that he didn't remind Shane of hitting that shot against Duke.
I'm going to guess from the way I saw Shane Battier play that he probably said something to Battier about it, and Battier immediately flopped on his back and tried to draw a charge foul, even though they were just talking to each other.
And then inevitably a crowd of people would show up and start cheering for him. I guess that's what everybody does.
Maybe Billy Packer wandered over and went, what you doing to Battier? Oh my gosh.
That's right. That's awesome. That's a good. That's a fun moment. All right, yeah, that's two that I agree with those, yeah.
Okay. I've got to lose you here because I'm digging deep in the archives for this one. Number three is a basket by Shelby Linville to win the 1951 National Semifinal. And before you can skewer my pick, here's my reasoning. It is a basket that's a game winner. It won a semifinal game, put Kentucky in a title game. If not for this basket, if Kentucky loses that game, maybe Adolph Rupp's dynasty doesn't happen. At this point, you look at Kentucky and you say they won two national titles with this great 48 and 49 team. It's the 51 championship that really gives birth to Kentucky as a dynasty because it's a different core of players. And those guys win a title. And to me, that is when basically Kentucky separates from, say, the 2006-07 Florida Gators. I mean, otherwise, you say, yeah, they had a great recruiting class. They had Beard, Groza, et al. They won a couple titles. Good for them. It's 51 that starts to make something special.
That sounds like a great argument for that. And who did they beat in that game?
Illinois, I believe.
Wow. So game-winning shot over Illinois in the Final Four to get to the championship game.
Correct.
And then they would go on to defeat. Who did they beat in 51? I can't remember.
Kansas State.
That sounds right. Yeah. I can't argue with that. That sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get more controversial. I'm going to have to pull out some Chris Harrison shots.
So are we at number two? Number two.
Number two, Aaron Harrison versus Wisconsin in the Final Four.
So of the Aaron Harrison trio of shots, you pick the final one that then kind of sends them into the championship game.
I do. I picked that one. The shot against Michigan was impressive from a sheer just absolute testicular fortitude standpoint. But if he misses the shot, they play overtime. The shot against Louisville was a big-time shot, but if he misses that, there's still 40 seconds or thereabouts to play, and you're not out of chances. The Wisconsin shot, you take that shot trailing, you take that shot with the game clock going down, and you're further along in the tournament. So, yeah, AH gets number two on my list. And I will say, had they won the championship, I'd probably give him number one.
Wow. So Aaron Harrison shot against Wisconsin, second biggest shot of all time. Only trailing number one, which is, drum roll for everybody, what?
I'm going to give you a shot to guess it. I mean, I'm sitting here with a list. I think you can guess it.
The biggest shot of all time. What have we not covered? I really don't know. I just have to tell me.
All right. Vernon Hatton, Temple, 1958 semifinal. You could pick his regular
season
shot.
Which Temple? Right, yeah.
Vernon Hatton, the Temple killer. The one in the national semifinal, in the closing seconds of the game, Hatton kind of gets ISO'd, goes past his man, scores a bucket, 10 seconds about to go in the game. Kentucky holds on, wins the game, win the title of the next time out. Vernon Hatton, Mr. Clutch, I give him that tiny edge over Aaron Harrison because he hit his semifinal winning shot for a team that went on and won the title.
Won the championship, sure. Yeah, I mean, you can't really argue about that. And what's fun about that is that he did the exact same thing and was a triple overtime in the regular season against the same team, right?
I think it was just the first overtime. But that's a great game where allegedly some Lexington City official died in the crowd.
Supposedly. But I think the game did go into triple OT. Is that right? Yeah, they ended up winning in that, and then beats them again in the Final Four. That's a pretty nice storyline to that season. I think that's a great list. I think, you know, being that we have some kind of easier kind of rules than what we had talked about before, meaning it doesn't have to be a tournament game, it doesn't have to be a game winner. I mean, there are other shots that we have talked about that are memorable. The Barrasso tip-in in 93 in the Maui Classic, which did win a championship. A Maui Invitational championship, but still. But that was pretty memorable. And what else? What other can we? Oh, like I said, the Scott Padgett shot that ended up tying the game and sending into overtime against Kansas in the 1999 second round game of the tournament, which was
again a shot that I did consider for my list. The only reason I left it off is because it was a second round game, but it was a basket that was worthy. If you wanted to argue for that over, say, the James Lee dunk, I would see your rationale in that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
And then you'd also have Cameron Mills' shot in the same Duke game, which tied the game, I believe, instead of Scott's taking the lead. Isn't that right?
I think it was the first lead was on Cameron's.
Is that right?
But then it was kind of seesawing back and forth, and Kentucky never trailed after Padgett's.
Yeah. So that was a big shot too.
Right.
And then let's see what else. We could talk about some other kind of lesser, and I know we talked about this before too. Just some completely wacky, out of this world kind of realm type shots. We talked about Nazi Muhammad's running one-hander to win against Vandy.
Mm-hmm.
I personally like Nerlens Noel's running one-hander after the shot clock expired.
What,
also
the shot clock, Ryan? Why is there that number up on top of the basket? What does that mean?
Which we all remember Bob Knight saying after the play occurred.
Poor Bob Knight.
But I love that. And I love that they both happened against Vanderbilt. I think that's fun.
Yeah.
What else? We talked about Rajon Rondo, who I believe hit two game winners when he was at Kentucky. Central Florida, I believe, was one of them. And South Carolina was another.
Yeah.
John Wall's last-second shot in his first game against Miami of Ohio was a big one.
Don't forget Brandon Knight taking down the Buckeyes with the 17-foot jumper in the NCAA Sweet 16.
That might have to be my top five. I mean, taking down the number one team in the Sweet 16.
It was a big money shot.
DeAndre Liggins clinching a Final Four berth with a three in the corner against North Carolina in that next game. Boogie Cousins with the layup at the end of the Mississippi State game to send it into overtime.
Anthony Epps with the foul shots in 1995 in the ACC tournament versus Arkansas.
After Rod Rhodes completely melted down. But now he's doing a really great job with his Cordia team.
Yeah.
Props to him. All of those are really great shots. I think the only one that I would really think about now that we've talked about is that Brandon Knight shot against Ohio State. That was a phenomenal shot. And then, of course, this one against Princeton in the first round to win that game, where, if you remember, he had not hit a field goal in the whole game and then hits the one to win it. That's mainly why I love Brandon Knight, by the way. But all that, and he's an attractive man. Let's just make that
good interview.
Let's just make that obvious. Anyway, we are coming to you live. Of course, when you hear it, it won't be live. But we're live right now from the Lincoln County Book Fair. It's the first inaugural, primary first, number one ever book fair. And we've sold 8 books, and we're very proud about that. After talking about some of those other shots, Joe, do you think there's any that you want to flop out or anything like that?
Well, that's an open invitation right there. We did leave out the great, weird Eric Daniels layup to beat Mississippi State.
That was great because I was living in Mississippi at the time. I had to listen to all those Mississippi State people who said they were basketball fans. They weren't.
And
they're not even football fans. They're baseball fans.
How much credit do you have to give Tubby Smith? I mean, Tubby Smith's such a great game coach that he didn't even draw that play up. He drew the play up to go to Chuck Hayes, and it got botched, and it still won the game.
Way to go, Tubby. How about this one? Do you remember this one? Do you remember the 2005 SEC semifinals against LSU? Chuck Hayes, which is probably the same play. Chuck Hayes gets the ball and beats LSU in a great comeback. I remember Patrick Sparks hit a three to bring us back into that one because we were down a little bit. And Chuck Hayes hits the layup at the buzzer to win it. And then we go to lose to Florida again in the SEC tournament.
Yeah, beginning a heartbreaking postseason, but there are so many great shots. There are so many great moments. I'm standing by my top five. I'm pleased with them.
It's a pretty good top five.
You can go different places and still have, you know, very good debating points.
That's a pretty good top five. I like it. I like it. Now, we can also talk about, I know we've talked about it before, but there was also, Jim Masters shot us in the first Dream game in overtime. We've got the tip game with our boy Sid, who I believe you interviewed for our book, isn't that right?
I did, Cedric Jenkins. You got to love the fact that Cedric played in four UK Louisville games and scored 2 points total in those four games, and it was the 2 points that won the Dream game in 86-87.
Okay, now, in typical... That is a great story, by the way. In typical UK heartbreaking fashion, we all know what number one is going to be. What are some big shots that have been hit against us?
Yeah, you know very well where the list has to end.
Number one is the shot where Grant Hill threw the ball into Satan. Satan took a dribble, hit a turnaround jumper to win it. I think we all remember where he was. I cried. I'm not ashamed to admit it. And you know, it's funny because Christian Laettner now seems like a pretty good dude with all the stuff he's done to try to win back some of his followers and stuff, and it seems like he's done some pretty nice stuff for UK, but that's going to be number one for forever. There's nothing's ever going to beat that. Other shots that come to mind, I got to think about Edgar Sosa's three against Kentucky. One of the only really fun times in the Billy Gillespie era was to see us come back against Louisville and tie that game. And Sosa just hangs out there for hours and then hits a three to break everybody's heart.
Well, you know, honestly, I deduct 1 point from the three. I think it should only count as a two. It's because he was guarded by Michael Porter. So based on degree of difficulty, his three is a two. If he'd driven past him for a layup, it would be a 1 point layup.
What are some other shots that have been hit? I mean, obviously, there's the shot that Georgia hit that knocked us out of the SEC tournament. Who was that white guy? What was his name? That big white guy who Dennis Felton in Georgia then goes on to win four games.
Zach something. I want to call him Zach Stacy, but obviously that's the running back with the St. Louis Rams.
I can't remember.
It wasn't him. But
that was a pretty heartbreaking loss in a season of heartbreaking losses.
How about young Mr. Qualls from the Arkansas Razorbacks for that awesome flying dunk to beat us in Fayetteville? I got to give that guy some love.
That's really great. That was in overtime.
Yeah.
And wait, it was in a double overtime.
I'm not sure.
It might have been in two overtimes. I'm not sure. But that was pretty heartbreaking. Yeah, I was following that on Twitter and really couldn't believe it when that came across.
Such a great instinctive play. I mean, just to glide in, catch the ball. I mean, you got nine guys on the floor who are looking up, watching the ball. And here comes Qualls just sprinting for the rim. Grabs it and throws it in.
I'll throw out there the shot that one of those twins from UAB hit to knock us out of the tournament in the second round when we were the number one overall seed. Was that that was 2003? 2002. No, 4. 2004. 2003 was the Keith Bogans year, and 2004 was when UAB knocked us out in the second round. That was a tough game.
Well, unfortunately, there just aren't that many shots. I mean, you know, you lose games, but you tend to lose games in a, you know, get beat by 10, get beat by 12,
right.
Beat by somebody hitting a crazy shot at the buzzer.
Right, that's the good thing about being a Wildcat, right?
Hopefully.
That's right.
Hopefully you win them all, but even when you don't win them all.
And we're back! This is Ryan and Joe, and this is Roads Less Traveled. Again, coming to you live for us, not for you, but live for us from the Lincoln County Book Fair in beautiful Stanford, Kentucky.
Historic, scenic Stanford, Kentucky.
That's right. I didn't know it was historic or scenic, but I found that out tonight.
Good place for anybody.
And we're back! This is Ryan and Joe.
It's like we were almost never gone.
Roads less traveled. We just sold 2 more books.
We did.
Which means we're up to...
I believe a dozen now.
12 books, everybody.
Podcasting is good for your book sales. So.
12 books. People are looking at us. And I did notice that there were, like, young women that were looking at us, too.
Yeah.
It's like podcast equals groupies.
It can't be anything else. Lord knows.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's definitely true. Okay, so we were talking about shots that were big against Kentucky, which I think we kind of exhausted that topic, did we not?
Yeah, there are not very many of them. But since you went with the FM radio voice, I'm going to go in that direction.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
First off, so one of the things we always like trying to talk about now that we're picking up listeners, right, is we always want to talk about sports. We always want to talk about music. We always want to talk about, like, books and literature and things that interest us. So today we're going to talk about music, which I hear some very strange music being played right now.
That was ironic. It was almost as if you called it forward.
That's really weird.
You know, bowels of musical hell.
You know what would have been even more ironic is if it was Alanis Morissette's Ironic.
It would have been, because nice. Alanis Morissette is actually one of the artists that I want to pick on. I mean, talk about.
This is the stuff you've been waiting for? Well, I mean, we have some copies left if you want to buy them. We have 7 copies right here. You just take them all.
I got 4 more down here.
That's 11. We have 11 copies if you want to take them.
And there's one on the stand. There's 12.
12 books if you want them. $14.95. Do you want just one?
It's like I need all 12.
Probably just one. Okay, we can do that. You want us to make it out to you?
I'm going to wait till my aunt gets here with
the... Oh, well, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Wait for your aunt. What's her name?
Isaiah.
We'll wait for her.
We'll be here.
Isaiah, is that right?
Nice.
And I'm sure this gentleman here wants to look at this stuff.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. This is the problem when you wear...
Not more than him. He's still enthusiastic. I'm becoming the old...
Who is still yet wearing a Kentucky shirt.
Yeah, in 78 was my day.
Yeah.
There you go.
What was our day? Is 96 our day or is 2012 our day?
I'm a little old for 2012. I feel a little more tuned in.
But I was in school in 2012.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I wasn't in school, so...
What if 98 was our day?
98's closer. Yeah. I'll take Tubby's
team. That's
too.
The team I like the least, though, out of all of them.
I like those guys.
How'd you like that last championship?
Or
they came further than I thought they would.
Sure. Oh, definitely.
As a freshman team.
Sure. Now, what about Cal, by the way? Can we at least talk about Cal and the success? And can we put to rest all of the he doesn't do it and whatever? I mean, I think he's pretty successful.
I mean, 3 Final Fours in 5 years is pretty good by anybody's standards, I would think. Pretty good by mine. I'll take Final Four 60% of the time.
As we said, I think as we talked about, I'm back. As we talked about in the Red versus Blue movie, I think I said something like, if you were going to tell me that we would have a run of Elite Eight, Final Four, National Championship, NIT, we would take it every 4 years and never say anything bad about it.
I surely would.
Now add another one onto it now, National Runner-Up. That's a pretty good 5-year streak.
Yeah. I'm down with it.
What's that?
This is our podcast that we do. It comes out every couple weeks or so. And you can follow us. You can go on iTunes and follow us if you want. Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called Roads Less Traveled.
Roads what?
Less Traveled. It's a poem. Yeah. Yeah. You can find it. Yeah. Ryan, you got a business card? You can just search his name on iTunes if you want.
Yep.
Search for the media empire of Joe Cox. There you go.
Yep, we're on there.
Well, I'll probably be that once I come spend the money.
Come on back, man. We got 25 minutes.
We'll be here.
That's probably the time she's in.
Great. And we're back.
And we're still back, yeah. But wanted to raise this topic. We're kind of old. We're not really old, but we're kind of old.
I'm 34.
I'm 33. I was thinking about the 90s because it's what you do when you're 34 or 33, or at least you do now. If you were 34 like 20 years ago, you don't. But and I was thinking about the music that we had back then, and I was curious who held up, who didn't hold up. So, time for lists again. I said I made some lists.
Right.
90s musicians, and that didn't mean you were exclusively in the 90s, just that you were big in the 90s.
Okay.
And which ones have fared well in the ensuing 15, 20 years, and which ones have not.
Okay, all right. So I can automatically, I have not made a list. Do you want me to kind of talk a little bit about some things off the top of my head that I've already thought of? Do you want me to talk about? Okay, so when I was, so I'm going to go back to the magical year of 1993 and 1994, which is when I was an eighth grader and a freshman at Pleasure Ridge Park High School. Go Panthers! But I'm going to start thinking about, as you already brought her up, I'm going to think about no one in the world was more popular around that time than Alanis Morissette.
This is true.
And I had the album.
Jagged Little Pill?
I played the album, and I'm not sure my parents were a big fan of that album.
She dropped some dirty words in there.
There's a couple of references that are, I think, PG-13 plus, maybe. But you know, I thought it was kind of neat, kind of angry girl rock. I mean, I was kind of into it. And I'm still a little puzzled that that song is about Dave Coulier. I mean, have you heard that?
Yeah.
You heard that rumor? And why is that?
That's apparently true.
If it was about John Stamos, I might buy that. But oh, Dave Coulier?
Yeah.
You know why? The big thing, the big wild card about this is that they're Canadian. That's just weird.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, Alanis Morissette did not hold up.
No, not at all. Although, I'm going to give her some credit here. I saw Alanis Morissette, and I don't know if this is more about Alanis Morissette or about me. But I saw her on TV, and I thought, you know, in a mom kind of way, she's kind of hot.
Do you think she got hotter?
Yes. Because I did not think she was hot when she was angry.
Did Ryan Reynolds make her hotter?
I have no idea what. I mean, again, it's probably just that I'm old. But
do you remember she did that one video where she was naked?
She did, but at that point, I'm not sure that I cared.
No, because, no, she wasn't hot.
Yeah, but now, you know, she like packs on some ears.
Now, if she happened to do a video naked, we might pay attention.
I'd definitely be more interested than I was then.
Is Alanis Morissette a mom now?
Surely she is.
So you're just thinking in a mom kind of way, but we don't know if she's really a mom.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. She's interesting for a number of reasons. All right, I'm going to throw out another one here.
Yeah.
Hootie and the Blowfish.
Oh, yeah. Hootie's on my list.
Cracked Rear View. I believe was the album.
I'm gonna bust out the name of the great Fairweather Johnson, because all those who apparently were Fairweather Johnsons, because you're not gonna find them now.
Really what this is this is reserved for the Blowfish.
That's
because
true.
Hootie is pretty famous.
Well, he is, but at the same time, he had to like become Charlie Pride II in order to make that happen.
Yeah, I mean, he's a member of the Grand Ole Opry now. So, I mean, did you know? I mean, he is.
That's terrible.
Yeah. And he won a. I think he got all of his success from a cover song. So, it's pretty interesting. But he is relevant now. The question is, what happened to the Blowfish?
And of course, they would resent all of this because there was that whole thing about how Hootie and the Blowfish wasn't a literal name.
Right.
Trucker is not Hootie. The Blowfish are not his.
It was basically two guys. It was like one guy named Hootie and one guy named Blowfish. But okay, so here's what I think. I think you're going to find the Blowfish at some airport hotel performing as a cover band for Hootie and the Blowfish. That's what I think you're going to find.
That'd be great. The Blowfish do Hootie and the Blowfish.
Their name will be Hootie, Whotie, and the Blowfish.
I can't rule it
cover out. Band for Hootie and the Blowfish. Other people that I think of that... I mean, I'm pretty much thinking...
Here's one that didn't fare well and okay. It breaks my heart.
Okay.
I personally am very disappointed with America's critical facilities on this one. Boyz II Men fell off the face of the earth.
Well, I mean, Boyz II Men are still kind of touring now.
Yeah, but their touring is like the opener for New Kids on the Block.
Right. Is it an opener or are they both switching off?
I think they're opening.
That's sad.
In any case, it's sad, but that's extra sad.
That's sad. Give a shout out to Philly.
I mean, this is like, you know, we have a celebrity softball game, and like, I get sent up to pinch hit for Cal Ripken or something.
It's really sad that one guy who had to just talked all the time, like, baby, I love you. Please forgive me for all the wrong I've done. Don't make me hit you again. You know, that guy. It's a shame that he's not with them anymore. Right? Didn't something happen to him?
I'm hoping that that's like Dennis, the guy who does the Allstate ads now, Dennis Haybert.
Dennis Haybert, right.
Like, baby, I stick up for you. Now I say, Joe Boo, I do this myself.
That's right. You're in good hands with Allstate after I beat you up and you need insurance. So, didn't that one, he got, something happened to that guy.
I don't know, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's not with him anymore. Yeah.
I can't rule it out, but still I miss them. I like those guys.
I had the Cooley High Harmony album,
yeah.
As well as the two, Boyz II Men 2 album, with hits like I'll Make Love to You.
Oh, yes.
And what was the other songs from that? I can't remember.
Water Runs Dry,
Song for Mama.
Yeah, there you go. One of us may have bought a Boyz II Men Greatest Hits CD in the last week. May have.
I'll give you hints. Not me. It is not me. And there's a kid after your own heart. He's got a UK football shirt on.
There you go.
Obviously, there's something wrong with them. No, I'm just kidding. Kid.
All right, who else you got?
Off the top of my head, I think of people like the Crash Test Dummies.
I wasn't even going there because they were a niche artist in the first place. I mean, they were destined for failure.
And I don't know what's going on with them. I have no idea.
No.
Nirvana was pretty popular, but they're not anymore.
Well, in a death... Actually, I put Nirvana on the plus side because they have the good luck to benefit from Kurt Cobain's death. I mean, if Kurt Cobain lives, Nirvana is a footnote at this point. But because he died...
Oh, you think so? You don't think they would have gone on to greatness?
No.
Or even more greatness?
No.
Really?
I think it would have crashed and burned.
Wow.
I think their reputation benefits immeasurably. They're kind of the Doors of the 90s to me.
That's very interesting.
You know, it worked out. I mean, obviously it didn't work out well for Kurt Cobain. Awesome. But as far as for their reputation, that was the best thing that could have happened.
So I'll ask the question this way. Do you think that you're in the minority view... in that most people would probably think that they would have kept going and being relevant?
I'm going to say this. Had they kept going and been more relevant, it would have been largely a result of Dave Grohl. Dave Grohl is the guy people want to forget about out of Nirvana because Cobain is Mr. Great Brilliant Genius, again, because he made the good career move of passing away young. No offense. But I just don't think...
Is this how
Cobain
we sell more books?
Well.
Is this what we have to do?
And insult Kurt Cobain, possibly.
Pass away young? Is that how we sell more books?
Yeah,
so I just, like, for the record, I don't believe any of that.
All right.
Nirvana would have been good. I mean, they probably would have had equal good and bad records.
Well, where would they have
gone
with it? That's the thing. I mean, the angst, the Generation
sure.
X grunge thing
sure.
wouldn't have lasted.
I mean, just like any band who does last, you know, whether it's the Stones or Zeppelin or whatever, and even Zeppelin didn't last that long, but, you know, even as you enter new eras of music, you can see where, you know, those bands in particular, like we were talking about, changed their sound a little bit and incorporated things. I personally just would have liked to have seen what would have happened. Because,
oh, sure.
like you said,
sure.
it would have been different. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess that's the answer is I don't know. I would have liked to have seen it, and I think it probably would have been just based on what they have done, I think it probably would have been pretty interesting. So I can't comment really as to whether or not it would have been successful commercially, but I think they would have done some interesting stuff. What's interesting is, though, is I think without that, of course, you would have no Foo Fighters.
Right.
So that's kind of interesting. Of course, I couldn't really care less about the Foo Fighters. They're fine. The Foo Fighters to me are like sugary cereal. Like I can go without it, or I can enjoy it. I don't really care. But I know some people who genuinely love the Foo Fighters. Like it's like the favorite band.
Sure.
And I know some people who hate them and cannot stand them and think that they are awful. And I can't agree with either of those people. I think they are a fine pop rock band, and that's pretty much what I got.
There you go.
They're very okay. Yeah, but they've been very okay for a long time.
They
which is good for them.
They have. All respect to that girl.
That's an interesting interesting debate, though. Yeah.
So here's another one for the plus side of the ledger. We were talking about this off podcast earlier. This, to me, would be the biggest surprise. I love these guys when their big record came out, but I would have never believed that 2 decades on they would be commercially or artistically relevant, and that's Green Day.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's a big surprise. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I love that band. I love what they've done. I love how they have become critically relevant, how they have kind of been able to say some critical things about the times that we live in and incorporate that into their music. I did not expect that from a bunch of pot-smoking teenagers, which is what their first album was all about.
Right. And I mean, great album, but yeah, just didn't see this coming from
them. Yeah, me neither. I have another band like that. At least is similar in a couple of ways.
Okay.
And I wonder how you feel about this. I did not see these guys becoming the phenomenon that they became. If that's accurate, I think it is. And that's the Dave Matthews Band. What do you think about that?
I put Dave Matthews on the minus side of the ledger just because I don't think that it's something that's held up well. I mean, I think they have their base.
Now, wait a minute. Are you coming at this from a personal standpoint, or you don't think they hold up well? Like, because that is completely not true.
I'm both. Admittedly, not a huge fan ever, although, you know, I didn't dislike them. I was kind of where you said you are with the Foo Fighters.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I thought they were okay. I've got an album or two of theirs. It was never my favorite thing, but I never hated it.
Sure.
But at the same time, it's kind of like that whole jam band thing.
Yes.
It's kind of drowned. I mean, granted, they're probably in the best position on the boat of the drowning jam bands, but they're still on the boat of the drowning.
Oh, no, they're not drowning. No. That band is so commercially successful, it's ridiculous. Every year they tour, and every year they're sold out. It's crazy, man. You have to admit this. They're on the plus side, and I did not see it coming, but it's amazing.
I think they've just recycled what they've got year in,
yes,
year out.
And what's funny is all of those same people keep going.
Yeah. No.
I mean, literally, they have become, like, who's somebody that can compare that to?
They're the Grateful Dead of their day is what it is. The Dead was the same way. The Dead made a few records. They got these people in, and they kept them.
But it's not. It's the Grateful Dead. If the Grateful Dead were also popular on pop radio. Because every now and then, that band comes up with a song that transcends easy listening, classic rock, modern rock, whatever, and that brings in even more people. And it is nuts. I'm telling you. It's crazy.
I see them as Grateful Dead Mach 2, but, I mean, you know, they're not.
It's way bigger than that. I'm telling you. I don't use that phenomenon word lightly because that is a terrible movie, but but yeah, I'm serious. That is something that I never saw coming. I thought when they came out, I thought they were almost like a pop jazz kind of band. They were interesting when they came out because they had different instruments.
Kind of a fusion sort of.
Totally.
Almost,
than what
yeah.
you would hear on the radio, and I liked that.
Sure.
Even when they came out when kind of like Blues Traveler came out, which, boy, those guys faded into oblivion, too.
You can't have a big fat guy as the leader of your band. I mean, I wish you could, because maybe I could get some gigs.
Let's talk about that in a second, but before we put Dave Matthews to bed.
He's not fat.
He's not fat.
Yeah.
He's also, I believe he's also South African, I think.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But we'll look this up, and we'll try to see just how popular these guys are. But I think we got to give them more credit than what you're giving them. I think they're a plus.
I don't know. We're going to agree to disagree.
But no, that's okay. But see, the difference here, I just want the argument to be that personal, like, you don't really dig them.
No.
And that's cool. But I think we got to give them credit for what they became, which was a pretty huge band. Bigger than what you realize, I think. So that's the point I made.
Entirely possible.
Now, real quick, let's talk about fat guys in bands. Because John Popper went on, he lost a bunch of weight. Did you know that?
He did.
One of their, I think it was it their guitarist or their bass player who died? Do you remember this?
Somebody died, yeah.
And that, like, scared him to death. And he lost a bunch of weight, but he's still really fat.
Yeah, I mean, dude, it was huge.
And do you remember they had a very memorable cameo on Roseanne once? Do you remember that?
I know that they were on Sesame Street one time because my kids watched this Sesame Street country video, which oddly includes John Popper singing Home on the Range while some other guy plays harmonica, which is the other weird part of it.
That's strange.
The other guy looks like he's like 12.
That's weird. That's like him letting somebody else eat a sandwich.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the strangest thing in the world.
So, they were also on Roseanne once, and they were allegedly the band that Dan was in when he decided to have a family and get married, and they went off and got popular. It was really just an excuse for John Goodman to sing Sweet Home Chicago on the Roseanne show. It was ridiculous.
It's so great they replaced the fat guy leading their band with another fat guy.
Right, yeah. Think about it. Blues Brothers, that didn't really last very long, did it?
Blues Brothers, Blues Traveler.
Oh, there's something weird about this, isn't there? Who other fat guys can we point to, though? And I guess that's the point, you really can't. You know, when Rob Thomas got really fat, he, like, Matchbox 20 kind of sunk.
Yeah, Fat Elvis struggled a lot more than Skinny Elvis.
You know, as the people start leaving here, we get louder and louder, don't we? And we're talking about completely ridiculous things.
Bands, I don't know.
Okay, so moving on. What about the rest of the list?
Here's another one. I'm on the minus side, and you may try to convince me that I'm crazy.
I'll do my best.
Pearl Jam.
How are they on the minus side? What is your criteria for on the minus side? Apparently, bands who sell millions and millions of records and ticket sales have to be on the minus side.
Maybe they still make music. I haven't heard anything.
Yeah, that album came out, I think it was either last year or 2 years ago. Yeah.
I missed that one.
Okay, but admittedly, you aren't fans of these bands.
Not a Pearl Jam fan. And I think really a lot of it had to deal with the fact that I kind of boxed them into the corner.
Right. Let's talk about those bands like that didn't work. Let's talk about Soundgarden completely fizzled out.
Yeah.
And Chris Cornell joined other bands like Rage Against the Machine that fizzled out. Stone Temple Pilots had 4 amazing albums and then broke up because Scott Wayland's a complete drug addict.
Yeah, I can't. Like STP is one I couldn't rule on because of that.
They're a minus.
That's an extenuating circumstance.
Yeah, they're a minus because their lead singer couldn't stay completely off coke or something.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, compared to those bands, look at Pearl Jam compared to those bands. I mean, arguably one of the biggest rock bands in the world, you know?
And you do still see
they gotta be a plus. Gotta be.
I know you'd hate it.
But here's the thing, and here's I'm going to call it Hootie Syndrome. Here's the thing about Pearl Jam. Pearl Jam never had a record that was as good or as popular as their first record.
Yeah, because you couldn't, exactly. Hootie Syndrome's a great name for this. When you overpromote the heck out of a record.
And Alanis had the same problem, and to an extent. See, and this is the other thing about Dave Matthews. Dave did it the right way. Dave actually held back some of his songs for his second record.
Right.
And his second record was the biggest record.
Yeah.
So now if you have a bunch of bands who can't live up to their second record, we'll call it the Dave Syndrome.
There you go. I can see that.
Okay, what else? I like this. This is fun, though, by the way.
I'm going to put Gwen Stefani on the plus side.
I would definitely agree with that.
Yeah. Great job.
Gwen Stefani on the plus side, no doubt.
Somebody else I just didn't see.
Probably on the minus side.
Gwen Stefani's kind of like Green Day, though. I mean, I would have never foreseen this.
Never.
I would have been like, wouldn't happen.
Can we also include, by the way, someone on the minus side, her husband's band, Bush?
Oh, yeah.
Minus. They also never had an album that lived up to their first album. Their second album was fine, but nobody bought it. And I don't think anybody has heard from those people in forever. You know, the one thing, I think people know Gavin as Gwen's husband.
That's kind of awesome.
Right. I mean, we would be okay with that.
Yeah.
I think he probably has a problem with it.
He probably does.
Anybody else on the list?
You had some kind of career acts that I think kind of revitalized in the 90s. Aerosmith is one that always comes to mind.
Oh, definitely, yeah, that's true.
If you're Aerosmith, to me, Aerosmith almost spent two decades just kind of moving in a circle and then busts through in the 90s.
Very Rolling Stones-ish.
Yeah.
You know, they had kind of a while off, and then kind of in the late 70s, early 80s, kind of came back.
Mm-hmm.
How about this? I'll throw this one out for you. Counting Crows.
I thought very strongly about Counting Crows.
I think you got to say plus. I mean, they're still together.
Yeah.
That dude dated two of the three chicks on Friends.
Does he have anything else to prove?
And have you seen what he looks like? He looks like he lives in a sewer. That dude is crazy.
He could be the breakthrough guy. Adam Duritz could be the guy who could get really fat and still front a band and still sell
records. You know, Adam Duritz is pretty overweight.
He's kind of chubby.
And he's got these really dirty dreadlocks.
Yeah.
Amanda and I went and saw them in concert once. I think they were on a double bill with Maroon 5. I know, I'm admitting to things. But we saw him, and I swear that guy was so stoned. Adam Duritz, I mean, he was so stoned. And it was very...
I kind of hoped you meant the guy from Maroon 5.
No. I think he's probably pretty cool in real life, yeah, based on what I've seen. But, man, that was just bizarre. It was a bizarre concert. It was very strange.
No Doubt.
And also No Doubt was a good one. I had the No Doubt album, Tragic Kingdom. It was very good.
I'm going to throw away another sacred cow under the bus,
okay,
here, because you know how I feel about his dad. But the Wallflowers, big old fat minus.
I think they have to be.
Yeah,
I mean,
disappointment.
They had that great second... What was that single off that second album? Nightwalker?
Sleepwalker.
Sleepwalker. That was really nice.
Yeah, I liked that second album, but that was it.
Nobody bought it.
Yeah.
Never heard from him again.
And like, the solo records that Jacob has done are terrible.
But no, I think that's true. I think you're right on with that one. And I had that first album. Everybody got sick
album
of hearing One Headlight.
Hootie Syndrome.
Very much Hootie Syndrome, yep. Yeah.
Yep.
Now, what about, and you got some other, like, you know, one-hit wonders from around that time. I think the kid said he was going to buy a book, and he's not buying a book.
Yeah.
And then? We're done.
We're not done with the podcast, but we're done.
Yeah. Actually, we're at an hour, and we're going to have to trim half of that. But
yeah, I think a lot of it's going to be trimmed. But anyway.
I wrote down a couple other random
sure
ones. Matchbox 20.
Matchbox 20. I think you got to say minus right now,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, just couldn't be relevant. How about Sugar Ray for big old fat minus?
Sugar Ray.
Mark McGrath.
That's outstanding.
Maybe
I love
Mark
that.
Mark McGrath got fat.
Now, Mark McGrath, though, he was a plus for a little while, because remember he was on, like, Extra.
Yeah, he's done some television work.
But then he got passed up by that guy from Saved by the Bell. Whoever that guy was.
Hopefully not Screech.
No, not Screech. He's a porn star. But yeah, anyway, but okay, so other like one hit wonders, what about the New Radicals? You remember them?
I do remember.
You got the Music in You, Don't Let Go.
Great record.
You know, what's funny about them, though, is I don't think a lot of people realize this, but they broke up before their single went out, and they had a smash hit single and no band.
That makes it hard to promote.
Gonna have to say minus on that one.
Yeah, that's a questionable business decision, to say the least.
Other bands that were kind of somewhat popular at the time, Garbage. Remember that one?
Yeah.
Here's
one you're gonna
fight
really
me on. Minus
because,
on that one.
But I can't even blame this on me. I really believe this. You
okay
probably won't.
I'm ready.
BNL minus.
Bare Naked Ladies minus.
I mean, I hate that.
No, I mean, didn't they have Hootie Syndrome kind of to an extent?
Yeah,
a little bit.
Yeah.
No, I think what you're saying is true. I will say that they put out an album right before Steven, the guy, coked out and got kicked out of the band. The last album they put out was amazing. I mean, it was really, really good. And somewhat commercially okay, but nothing like what they had before. But yeah, I think you're right. I think that, you know, 1 week, nothing's ever going to be bigger than 1 week.
No, you can't go back there. And on some level, maybe you shouldn't. So
true, yeah.
How you leave it.
Yeah, I think that's true. But no, I'm not going to fight on that one. I agree. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I want to try to separate what I like from what I can see is not really culturally relevant anymore.
Right.
And that would be them. Of course, oh well, I will say this. They do have the theme to the Big Bang Theory. So
that is true.
So that that's true. Probably the one thing they're known most for.
Which is a great earworm, yeah. You got to give them that.
That's true. That's true.
Well, it's about that time. The Lincoln Book Festival is shutting down.
I think they're going to kick us out.
The lights are going off. The cords are being pulled.
And now we will reference another great band from that time, Semisonic. It's closing time.
But do you know who you want to take you home?
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Indeed.
And whatever happened to those guys? You know they went to Harvard?
Big Fed Minus.
I think they all dropped out of Harvard. I could be wrong on this, but I think it's like Harvard or Yale. They all dropped out. Started that band. And the lead singer was gay.
Well.
Yeah. So he knew who he wanted to take home.
Other dudes, apparently.
Apparently.
Anyway, that's good.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah. Just putting it out there. Probably like he was.
I think this is a classic episode, Joe.
There you go. A fun time here in Lincoln County. We will be back in the not-distant future. Maybe the Southern Kentucky Book Fest.
We'll do that probably in a couple of weeks. Yeah,
not before. We may need an NBA draft wrap-up.
Roads less traveled.
Peace out.
Peace.